वन्देहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतपादकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगना रघुनाथान्वितां तां सजीवं सद्वैतं सवदूतं परिजनासहितां कृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पदां सहगना ललिता श्री विशाखावितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपीश गोपिका कांता राधाकांता नमोस्तुते ताप्त कांचना गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्राणमामि हरि प्रिये वंशकल्पातरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्येव च पतितानां पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे अजानुलंबित भुजौघनकवदातु संकीर्तनाय कपितरौ कमलाय दक्ष विश्वंभरो द्विजवरो युगधर्मपालो वंदे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो यन्तः प्रविश्य मम वाचि मम प्रसुप्तं संजीवयात किल शक्ति दरःस्वदम्न अन्यांश्च हस्तचरणाश्रवणाद्वागादिं प्रणन्नमो भगवते पुरुषाय तुभ्यम् हरे कृष्ण आई वॉज गिवन अ स्पेसिफिक टॉपिक फॉर टुडेज दिस कोर्स व्हाट इज द special contribution of Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya and what is the specialty of our line of philosophy and practice. And it's a vast topic. It's a really big topic and very interesting topic too. So I can only speak few things and maybe I will not even speak so long. I'll speak a little bit and maybe I will open for questions. By some coincidence, I was giving class on exact same topic yesterday for Russian Sangha. Spontaneously, without you asking or whatever, I kind of chosen this. And of course, I'm not so happy the way I presented it because, again, I didn't say as much as I wanted to say. But let's see what's come out today in this regard. The starting point of this sort of discussion is that usually religions, they talk about the same thing. Most of the religions, 95, maybe 85, 90% of religion, religious content, so to speak, or the message of religion is more or less the same. And the main topic of religion is to bring you to the point of surrender through different means. And that's exactly what Krishna did in Bhagavad Gita because that's his finishing point. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam saranam braja. Just surrender unto me. And for most of the religions, it's the highest achievement, highest possible achievement. If somebody accepts the will of the Lord in his life conscientiously and surrenders to this will and accepts it with gratitude, that's considered to be the greatest achievement. We're rebels by nature and we want to reject God. And even if we accept him, we accept him in some sort of a service position. He should serve me, he should facilitate me in my needs and my desires, fulfill my desires. So the real surrender is a rare thing, and ultimately all the religions, they target this thing as the highest. And whatever religion we will take, we will find this element there. In Bible, in New Testament, there is this story in when Jesus Christ was praying to God at night before the crucifixion, and he was in complete turmoil because he knew that something really inauspicious is going to happen tomorrow, and he didn't want it. It was so intense that it is said that the drops of blood came out from his forehead. He was praying so intensely. But ultimately he was pacified and said, I accept your will. It's not my will, your will. I accept whatever you want me to do, I will do it, even if I don't want. That's a very drastic example of surrender. It's not an easy thing, you know, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to go through this very difficult thing. If Lord Chaitanya would talk about surrender and only surrender, it would not make this line of thought any special. And if we take Vaishnava Sampradayas, then Sri Sampradaya, they're really into the point of surrender. But the Saranagati, you know, Ramanuja and Vedanta Deshika and all the great acharyas from Sri Sampradaya, they wrote treatises on this topic about Saranagati. And for them, Saranagati even higher than Bhakti. They make quite an interesting distinction, which we don't agree, obviously, with. But they say that there is a bhakti, which they think is a path of rituals, or worship in the temple. And then there is a highest path, which is Saranagati. And they have three charama shlokas. One of them is Sarvadharman Parityaja, Mamekam Sharanam Rajaya. Another one is from Ramayana, Sakriteva, how it is? From when Vibhishana surrenders to Ram and Ram says that I will protect you, Abhayam Sarvada. I will make you completely fearless. And then there is another one from Varahadev. Anyway, they speak and elaborate on this point of surrender, what is surrender, and for them surrender, again, is the pinnacle of religious practice or the internal development of the soul. But as we know, and this is the statement of our acharyas, the Srimad Bhagavatam starts where Bhagavad Gita ends. Srimad Bhagavatam, that's the starting point, that's not the final point, that's the starting point. And the starting point is that dharma projita kai tavo atra. Here, there is no other religions. In other words, the point of surrender is behind. Srimad Bhagavatam is the book which starts or which implies that to understand this book, you have to be completely surrendered. Paramunir Matsaranam Satam. You have to relinquish all kinds of envy from your heart and surrender to God. Irrevocably, then only you will be able to understand what Srimad Bhagavatam is all about. Not before that. And what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did, he actually came to teach us all the things which are happening after the point of surrendering. What should take place within our heart and what is the development within our heart after we completely surrender to His will, to Lord's will, and how we should go further. And he gave a completely new interpretation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, what we have at hand is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's reading of Srimad Bhagavatam. He based, of course, all his teachings on Srimad Bhagavatam, but he read Srimad Bhagavatam in a completely different light. Like if we take, for example, Madhava's interpretation, Madhava Bhagavata Tatparya Nirnaya, his interpretation. It's interesting, but nothing close to what we say. And basically, for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's interpretation, two verses of Srimad Bhagavatam are foundational. And we give a completely different interpretation of these two verses. Or I would say even one and a half verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. One verse is, of course, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Это чам шакалав пумсах, Кришна стубаван своям. Another one, ваданти татва видас, татвам яджгьянам адвоям, рамети параматмети бхагаванети шабдяте. So, these two verses, from these two verses, the whole Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta is basically derived. But a very specific interpretation, like this year I gave a seminar comparing Madhava's interpretation of Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam verse and our interpretation. What are the differences between two? It's actually very interesting if we get into details. But that's the foundation of our whole our philosophy. And basically, first verse, which Srila Jiva Goswami explains elaborately in Bhagavad Sandarbha, the whole Bhagavad Sandarbha, and the whole Bhagavad Sandarbha and Paramatma Sandarbha. There's two Sandarbhas, two huge books, very philosophical. They are basically explaining this one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam vyajgyanam advayam. In other words, they are explaining the different relationship between Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. And then the next verse, Krishna stu Bhagavan svayam ati cham shakalah pumsah, the entire Krishna Sandarbha is the explanation of this verse. And the point is that, first of all, of course, we are elaborately proving or explaining that the personal aspect, Bhagavan, is the highest aspect in comparison to Paramatman. Most of the people, believe it or not, most of the Vaishnavas, not of the people, I'm not speaking about general people, I'm not speaking about Mayavadis, most of the Vaishnavas which are there will never be able to explain to you the difference between Paramatman and Bhagavan. You ask them, who is Krishna? Krishna is Paramatma. They don't distinguish between the two. For them, Paramatma and Bhagavan is the same. They don't understand the specialty of Bhagavan is in his personal aspect. Bhagavan, it's God for himself. Paramatma is God for this world. It's the controlling feature. It's God who is immanent to this world and who is controlling this world. But Bhagavan is, you know, has nothing to do with this world, basically. He is there enjoying, you know, he's not the God of this world. So most of the Vaishnavas, they don't understand this difference. And basically they don't, of course, they don't understand the difference between Narayana and Krishna. So why, what is the progression? First, if you clearly understand Vadanti Tattva Vidas verse and the message of this verse, and know how to prove Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. Then from this verse you will have to prove that Krishna is the highest manifestation of Godhead, with his unlimited, immense ability to enter into relationship, personal relationship with everyone. So that's how it is, and basically that's what Lord Chaitanya brought. The whole Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta is based on these two verses, as I said, and in understanding that Krishna is much higher than Narayana. You try to tell this to any Vaishnava and you will be condemned, and you will be branded as a heretic and as a dveshi. It is specifically said, but Madhvacharya, he has in his Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya 9 points of dvesha, 9 points of offense, one can say, which you can create and or commit. And one of the offenses which he lists is specifically to distinguish between the different forms of the Lord. He says that if you make this distinction, then you are dveshi and you have to be rejected. You are basically nowhere in the spiritual realm. So, congratulations, we all belong to this category in one way. Not in there, of course. We have our own understanding. We say, yes, Narayana is the same. By tattva, he is the same as Krishna and everyone else. You know, Matsya and Kurma and Ram and everyone else. But from another point of view, from Rasavichar, yes, there is tattva vichar and rasa vichar. From rasa vichar, there is a gulf of difference. We don't know too many beautiful, ecstatic bhaktas of Matsya avatar. Because Matsya avatar, you know, he doesn't manifest his personality so clearly. It's very difficult, you know. What can you do for Matsya avatar? You can give him some... something for goldfish. You know, there's not much you can do for him. Kurma avatar or whatever, and even Nrisimha. But we have this outstanding concept or conception or outstanding manifestation of God, which is Krishna. And Srimad Bhagavatam as a special creation of Vyasadeva, the last creation of Vyasadeva, specifically describing him. I remember I was in Srirangam long back, and we came to this sanctorium of the temple. And of course, huge, you know, figure of Mahavishnu is laying there on Ananta Shesh, and Lakshmi is massaging his feet and he's dreaming. But what is most interesting, in the inner chambers of the altar of this Ranganath temple, there is only pictures about Krishna. All Krishna's pastimes are there. So I asked, how come he's Narayan? You know, why Krishna's picture are there? Why only Krishna's picture? And the answer was, oh, because he's dreaming about his sweet pastimes when he was a cowherd boy, you know, in Vrindavan. But our understanding is that this is the highest. When God manifests his ability completely to relate to others, to relate to other living entities, including us, then this is the highest manifestation. And that's exactly that Lord Chaitanya brought to us. This chance or this possibility to enter into this personal relationship with God, which is nowhere else. I mean, it's very reduced and reserved in any other tradition to a very rudimentary sort of relationship, awe and reverence, you know. But Lord Chaitanya came and said that beyond this awe and reverence, beyond this point of surrender, there is a whole realm of spiritual emotions. So basically, if we from these two philosophical points, There's two philosophical verses which are foundational for our tattva vichar. The whole new realm being revealed, and this new realm, the realm of spiritual emotions. How from these philosophical points you come to a completely different understanding, and basically it's really amazing what Lord Chaitanya gave without writing books, without even too elaborately speaking about this. Of course, he empowered Rupa Goswami to do this, to explain this. So basically, again, the special contribution of Lord Chaitanya is that very quickly and very naturally he brings us to the point of complete surrender. Without really making a big deal out of it. Because everyone else would make a really big deal about the complete surrender and this and that. This is kind of, in Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, it's taken for granted. It's really elementary. As Prabhupada says, this is just ABC. And it's a fact, it's ABC of the spiritual life. Complete surrender, just give up everything, surrender completely, and then the real thing will start, and the real thing is your personal relationship with God. And as I explained yesterday, there are two shaktis which Lord Chaitanya, and Jiva Goswami specifically explains this, Lord Chaitanya invested into the holy name. And one shakti is called Taraka Shakti, which means the delivering energy, the energy of salvation, the energy. Taraka means the Shakti which brings you to another, helps you to cross over the material realm, so to speak, from the Sanskrit root Tar. Tar means to cross over. So, specifically the word Ram, the name Ram, is the vehicle for this Taraka Shakti. Ram, 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 Ram. And when people call Ram, they're basically, asking Lord to save them, to cross over this insurmountable ocean of material existence. But then there is Paraka Shakti, and Paraka Shakti is the Shakti of special relationship. Of personal relationship, or actually this is the Shakti of love. So beyond this salvation or whatever, there is this another realm of love, and Krishna is the manifestation of this Paraka Shakti, or the Shakti or energy of special relationship. And what I want to do, yesterday of course I went in another route and I explained how the episode how Rupa Goswami actually discovered what is there in the heart of Lord Chaitanya, Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale, and revealed it to the world. So, from historical point of view, what happened, Lord Chaitanya, he underwent this really drastic transformation in Gaya, after when he received his initiation from Ishvara Puri and came a completely transformed person and started experiencing something. But of course, his purpose was not only to experience it for himself, but to share it with everyone else, which is a very difficult task, because basically he wanted to share love. And one characteristic of love, according to, again, Jiva Goswami in his Priti Sandarbha, is that love is not sadhya. Sadhya is something which you can create. Like sabji is sadhya. And cooking is sadhana. Yes. Cooking is a process, and the goal is sabji. Like you're cooking something, you're doing something, but your goal is sadhya. So one very important point is that we want to get love, but love is not sadhya. It's not something which you can cook. It's not something, love is not something which you can achieve by following certain process, so to speak, in one sense. And therefore it is said, sadhya kabunoi. It's not sadhya. Nitya siddhasya bhavasya. It's nitya siddha. So how you get it? How you get? And that's exactly what happened back there 500 years back when Lord Chaitanya started experiencing it. And there is this dilemma, this problem, you know, how to share it with others, how others can understand what's happening within my heart. Because first of all, he of course wanted to experience it himself, but second of all, and perhaps even more important, he wanted to share it with others. So how to give it to others if it's not sadhya? Love is something which happens. It's not something which you are supposed to achieve by some systematic process. It just happens. It's either there or not. Just today I was listening to one lecture, and it was said there in this lecture, very interestingly, that you cannot say that really, if you talk about spiritual love, you cannot say about love in present continuous, because it's not something which you are doing, because present continuous, if you use present continuous, it means you're doing something and then the rest of the time you're not doing this. So the love, it's either there or not there. Either you love all the time or you don't love. You can say, I'm loving now and I'm hating the next moment. You know, in other words, it's existential state. So it should happen with you. And Lord Chaitanya, he wanted to share it with us. And he taught Rupa Goswami how to achieve something which is not achievable. What are the process of something which you cannot, to achieve something which you cannot achieve by the process, by a process, by any process. So it's a very, very amazing thing which Lord Chaitanya brought and how he did it. And nobody could understand what's really happening or taking place in the heart of Lord Chaitanya. And the first time when only one person or two persons, Ramananda Raya and Swarup Damodar Goswami, they knew. They were privy to what is happening in his heart. And for the first time, when Rupa Goswami revealed that he also knows, Lord Chaitanya called him a thief. We know this story from Madhya Lila when Rathayatra procession was going on, and Lord Chaitanya was reciting this verse from Sahitya Darpana, from Vishwanath, not Vishwanath Chakravarti, but from some mundane poetries. Lord Chaitanya is reciting again and again this verse, Yah Kumara, that when I was young and you, my beloved was young, we were meeting under the moonlit nights, and you know, and nobody could understand what's going on. Why Sannyasi is chanting this mundane love poetry all of a sudden. And then when Rupa Goswami wrote the verse explaining what is happening, Lord Chaitanya called him a thief. He said, you know, what's happening? How come you understood something which is hidden within my heart? And when he asked this question from Rupa Goswami, Rupa Goswami became very shy. But Swarup Damodar Goswami, who was standing nearby, he said, you know, why are you asking this strange question from him? First, you invested him with a Shakti to understand this, and now you're asking why he understood you. It's your desire to reveal this to everyone through Rupa Goswami. And you desire to reveal it, and now you're wondering. When you embraced him in Benares, when you met Rupa Goswami, through this embrace, you invested this Shakti in him so that he could understand what's going on in your heart, and he is going to reveal it to everyone. So what I want to do, it's very brief thing, I don't want to get into it. What I want to I want to explain this particular topic while giving two explanations of the first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It may be interesting because in this one verse, Srila Rupa Goswami, he revealed the entire philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavas in a very beautiful way, in a unique way, in this one verse of the first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And you probably know that there are two completely different readings of this verse. One is called Chandrapaksha. Somebody knows this verse by heart? Akila Rasamrita Murti. Next. Prasrimara. Ruchi. Ruda. Paraka. Tali. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Atmavidya Prabhu. Vidur, in this verse, the conventional meaning of Vidur is moon, Chandra. So the first meaning of this verse, which is important to understand, it's actually poetry, and poetry always have many meanings. So the first meaning of this verse, Vidur Jayati, the moon is glorious. The moon is actually taking over the whole world. Jayati, it's in the present tense. So Vidur Jayati, all glory to the moon. The moon is all glorious. Why the moon is all glorious? First of all, because it's Akila Rasamrita Murti. Because all the rasas, all the juices which are there, Prabhupada often say that all the juices in plants are coming from what? From moonlight. Whatever juice is there, whatever, prana is there in the vegetables, in any vegetation, so whatever, it's coming from the moon. It's streaming from the moon. According to Vedic theory, I don't know if it's confirmed or not, but anyway, if there is no moon, if moon is completely clouded, then you will not get really juicy or organic food, so to speak. You will get some junk. supposedly some nectar is flowing from the moon and entering into this with the moon rays. It's a very special thing, moon rays, which they bring to the vegetable. Therefore, it is said that why we're glorifying the moon, why the moon is so important. First point is that Akila Rasamrita Murti is that all the rasas, all the juices are coming from the moon. So then the next is Prasrimara Ruchi Rudha Taraka Palihi. Prasrimara literally means subdue. Ruchi means the effulgence. And Ruda, Prasrimara means not subdue. Prasrimara means to spread. Ruchi means the effulgence. So this effulgence, by the effulgence of the moon, the bright effulgence of the moon at night, Prasrimara Ruchi, while spreading this ruchi or effulgence, the moon Rudha subdues Taraka Palihi. Taraka means stars, and Palihi means galaxies. In other words, all the galaxies of the stars, when the moon is shining brightly on the sky, they're completely subdued. Nobody look at this little, specks when the moon is there. The moon is so prominent and so beautiful, and everyone is looking at the moon, therefore it is said, Ruchi Rudha Taraka Palihi. And then Kalita Shyama Lalita, the moon is accepting night as his own, embracing night. Kalita Shyamala, Shyamala, Shyamala means night. And, you know, the moon feels very good at night because during the day nobody sees the moon. The night is very important for the moon. Therefore, moon is happy when the night is there. There is some intimate relationship between them. And then the last line is the most important in both interpretations of the verse. And the last line means Radha Prayin Vidur Jayati, that this moon is trying to please Radha Prayin. Is trying to please a special nakshatra, which is called Vishakha Nakshatra. You have to know little astrology, little Jyotish to understand this this meaning, because in there are 27 nakshatras in the zodiac, and the moon within 1 month goes from one nakshatra to another nakshatra to another nakshatra. And there is one nakshatra which is called Anuradha. It's in Scorpio. This Anuradha Nakshatra. So, before Anuradha Nakshatra, Anuradha Nakshatra is the 17th Nakshatra. And the 16th Nakshatra is called Vishakha Nakshatra. But if Anuradha means what? Something which follows Radha. Yeah, so if 17th Nakshatra is Anuradha, then the 16th Nakshatra, another name is what? Radha. Radha. And this Radha Nakshatra, the moon, when the moon, the full moon enters this Vishakha Nakshatra during the hottest season, the hottest months of the year. This is the Vaishak months, Vaishak. This is May. So when everyone is really suffering out of intense heat of the sun, and then the night comes, everyone feels relief, and especially when there is the full moon, everyone is completely happy, and this full moon comes in this Vishakha Nakshatra or Radha Nakshatra, so it's considered, according even to astrology, the most powerful manifestation of the moon, when the moon is together with Vishakha Nakshatra, when the full moon is in Vishakha Nakshatra. So basically, the first reading of this verse is that, this moon is very special because it gives you juices, because it subdues all the stars and galaxies of stars, and then it accepts the night, and then the moon is very happy when it meets with Radha. Radha Prayan Vidur Jayati. So, I guess you are totally bewildered. What does it have to do with us? And what is the point of this whole thing? But there is a beautiful point. It's really beautiful how Srila Rupa Goswami explains this. And of course, we know this. It's Chandra Paksha, the interpretation according to the astrological thing in relationship to the moon. But if we take, of course, he wants to glorify Krishna. And Vidur is another name for Krishna. And we all know, I will not get into details, but briefly I will tell another meaning of this. Vidur Jayati, all glories to Krishna. Krishna is this moon which is conquering over everyone, everyone's heart. Krishna, the highest manifestation of God, is Krishna, and he is Vidur Jayati. So why he is Vidur Jayati? The point number one, because he is Akhila Rasamrita Murti. He's conquering everyone because he is the most capable of entering into loving relationship or giving love, giving rasa. There is nobody else as capable of reciprocating with our feelings inside as Krishna. And there is plenty of descriptions, and actually the whole poetry of Rupa Goswami is about these nuances. How these rasas manifest in relationship between the devotees and Krishna, and what are the enjoyment of these rasas. So first point is very clear, Akhila Rasamrita Murti. And then, of course, we know the next line, Prasrimara Ruchi, Prasrimara Ruchi Rudha, Tara Kapalihi. So what he does, he subdues, whom he subdues? Taraka and Pali. And Taraka is the leader of Vipaksha, the rival group of gopis. And Pali is the leader of neutral, Tatastha Paksha, of the neutral group. So he lists four names in this, five names. Kalita, Shyama, Lalita, he accepts or embraces as his own Shyama and Lalita, who are the leaders of Suhrit Paksha, and there are these four groups of gopis which are there. And then Radha Prayan, Vidur Jayati, Radha Prayan, he just goes out of his way to serve Radha or to please Radha. So that's basically another thing, another interpretation of this verse. But what he wants to say really, please listen very carefully, is that he makes this statement, why Krishna is so special? Because he is rasik. He is given this taste of personal relationship. And how he gives the taste of personal relationship, how he relates differently. He describes while making these points. He says, for those who are very reserved, for those people whose love is of this, whose love is mixed with some awe and reverence, he subdues them. He says, Prasrimara Ruchi Rudha. He's so beautiful. He comes with his beauty. Krishna comes with his totally conquering beauty. And all these gopis, they see him and they completely, their heart melts and they say, yeah, you're right, we're yours. This Vipaksha feeling, which is there, is I'm yours. The Radharani's followers, they say not that I'm yours, they say you are mine. Krishna is mine. And these other gopis, they say we are his. So he comes to this sort of, he reciprocates with this sort of feeling and says, yes, you're mine. He subdues them. He accepts as his own other gopis who are followers of Radharani, Kalita, Shyama, Lalita, Shyamala and Lalita, they are representative of these other two groups. And then he serves Srimati Radharani, but basically, listen, and this is why I wanted to say this. He values, or he measures relationship towards him from the point of view of Srimati Radharani's relationship. Basically, this verse is not glorifying Krishna. This verse is glorifying Radharani. This verse is saying that if you develop similar sort of mood towards Krishna, if you manage to enter into this similar relationship, this is the most pleasing to him, so much so that he becomes subdued by this love. Basically, this verse, what he describes how Krishna, to a different extent, being surrendered to the devotees. The special contribution of Lord Chaitanya is that, yes, we have to surrender to him. But when we surrender to him, we can love him in such a way that he will surrender to you. Krishna is specialty, his special characteristic is that he is prema adhin. Prema adhin means he is subdued or surrendered by the love of devotees. And this verse describes five types of love or five types of relationship on the whole range or spectrum of all this relationship, which are there in the first line, Akhila Rasamrita Murti. But then he says that there are some special kinds of relationship which are progressively more and more intense. To the extent the intensity of this relationship are there, Krishna becomes more and more subdued to this relationship. So this verse is actually glorifying Radharani's love, saying that this is the highest. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to explain exactly this. That's his special purpose and special contribution. What does it mean? How? What should be your mood so that you would be able to enter into this sort of relationship? And he explained the means how to enter into this sort of relationships through this Ratha theory, and you know, Rupa Goswami explained actually how the experience of rasa can come upon you, can descend upon you, even though it's completely not through the systematic process, but still it can descend upon you if you do everything properly, if you purify your heart and you add the ingredients of rasa into there. Basically, you know, he explained, Lord Chaitanya explained it to Rupa Goswami, this progressive path, how you first purify your heart and how you come to the point of complete surrender at Nishta platform. You become stable in your relationship with the Lord, but you still don't experience all the, you know, the taste. And then from there, through reading about Krishna and hearing about Krishna, specifically hearing about Krishna, you will be able to experience some shadow of the feelings which are there described by Shukadeva Goswami in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. When we read 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, well, you know, there is a nice story. There was Gopal Bhatta Goswami once, he was giving a discourse on Rasa Lila. And he was there with his followers from Vrindavan. And when he was speaking, everyone started crying. At one point, they just couldn't contain themselves. They just felt this flow of emotions which are there described in this poetry of Srimad Bhagavatam of the 10th canto. And they felt what Shukadeva Goswami is trying to convey. And they were transported there in the bank of Yamuna into this night of Sharad Purnim, when this Rasa Lila was taking place. And among this group of people, there was one very pure Brahmana from Dakshin India, from the south of India. And he came there and he also listened to what Gopal Bhatta Goswami was saying, but there was no tears in his eyes. He couldn't feel, his heart was not moved, and he was looking around and everyone is crying and everyone is, you know, and he felt that something is strange is going on. Why I'm so cool? So next evening, when the katha was supposed to take place, he came and he brought little pepper with him. So when the same story started, repeated itself, when Gopal Bhatta Goswami started explaining this Rasa Lila, and everyone was immersed and kind of imbibed these moods which I described there, and everyone started crying. And again, he was the only one who didn't feel like crying. So he took little pepper and put it into his eyes. And lo and behold, he started crying too, and he felt good. Yeah. But Gopal Bhatta Goswami noticed this trick. He noticed that there is something fishy going on. So he came, after the katha, he came to this Dakshinatya Brahmana, and he asked this Brahmana, you know, why did you do this? You know, please, could you explain to me? I saw that you put something and then all of a sudden you started crying. And this Brahmana, he said a very interesting thing to him. He said, because yesterday I was there in your katha and I didn't feel anything. My heart was as hard as a stone. I was just sitting and I just couldn't feel this love. And I saw that everyone else is feeling this. And I felt really bereft of this. So, and I started condemning my eyes, that my eyes are as dry as they always are. So this time I brought this pepper, and when my eyes became as dry as they always are, I decided to punish my eyes by putting some pepper there so that they would know what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to cry. So what I want to say is that Srila Rupa Goswami, he explained in his poetry, and especially in his magnum opus, his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in his masterpiece, he explained how to get something. He explained this anatomy. Oh, you know, the real something, how to get to the spiritual emotions and how to make sure that emotions are spiritual. To make sure that emotions are spiritual, you have to go through all these stages: adau shraddha, tata sadhu sangha, tato bhajana kriya, anatta nivritti syat, and so on and so forth. You reach nishta stage, but then at nishta stage, or even before, even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that if you are well established on anartha nivritti, you should start doing some artha pravritti, increasing artha. You can't just do anartha nivritti, anartha nivritti, anartha nivritti. At one point, you will have to start your inner cultivation of these emotions. Of course, it has to be done carefully and by going through all the stages of preliminary purifications. But if you don't do this, Lord Chaitanya, you know, he wasted his time by coming here. He came to give this. And this is a special gift which he gave, all these rasas which he revealed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Nobody else explains Srimad Bhagavatam the way Srila Rupa, actually Srila Jiva Goswami explained by taking the lead of Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami didn't explain Srimad Bhagavatam per se. He gave the framework or the key how to explain Srimad Bhagavatam. And he revealed all these nuances of the spiritual emotions which are described in the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, and nobody could understand it before. Nobody. People read the same verses, nothing was happening. They didn't understand all these nuances, and basically they remained on this quite preliminary or elementary platform of complete surrender or shantaras or maximum dasyaras. But when Rupa Goswami came and explained all this stuff by the means of poetry, because there is no other way to explain this. You can only explain this through the poetry. Because There is a poetic experience when you read the poetry, and if you are, if your heart is clean enough, is purified enough, then you will, then the feelings of the author, or the feelings which author wants to convey through this poetry, will reflect within your heart, and you will understand this. And Rupa Goswami, he gave the rational explanation of this, but besides that, he gave, you know, a lot of poetry to this. And Srila Jiva Goswami, coming back to this verse, which I explained, the first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he actually gives in one purport to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Durasa Lila verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, he gives a very interesting story sort of description why these two meanings are there in this verse. As I said, the point which I want to make is that even through this first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami is explaining something really amazing. And Srila Jiva Goswami, he says that once there was a story when, not once, during this Rasa Lila, when Krishna and Gopis, when they reunited, they were walking in the moonlit light, under the moonlight, on the bank of Yamuna, and this, and the, you know, soft sands of Yamuna, and they were singing some songs. They were experiencing this amazing feelings of love to each other, and they were completely happy. And at one point, Krishna looked at the moon. And by looking at the moon, Krishna, being overwhelmed, and we all know, all the poets, they're looking at the moon, and they're glorifying the moon, because the moon is feeding their feelings, their romantic feelings. So the same thing happened, according to Jiva Goswami, during this Rasa Lila night, when the gopis in this with Krishna in a completely happy mood were walking, and Krishna looked at the moon and started glorifying the moon. And he pronounced this verse, directing it to the moon. He said, Akhila Rasamrita Murti, Prastrimara Ruchi Ruda. He explained the whole verse, Vidur Jayati, how amazing is the moon. And gopis, because it was kirtan, and in kirtan, the leader, he pronounced some verse, and then everyone else should repeat this. And gopis repeat the same verse, but when they repeated this verse, they entered completely different meaning into this. And they says, yes, Vidur Jayati, all glories to Krishna, who is so capable of reciprocating with the love of different devotees, who is perfectly reciprocating with the moods of devotees and reflecting these moods and giving so much pleasure by entering into this relationship. And when they sang it, Krishna understood that they are completely interpreting it in a completely different way. And Krishna became very pleased. So that was the kirtan. And that's the point of this first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. How it's going, actually, that the point is that, yeah, it's all about love. But it's difficult. It's difficult to obtain love. To purify heart, it's not difficult. When we only target at this, the spiritual life will become really miserable. we become miserable. To purify heart is not difficult. It's not really difficult. Through some associations, through chanting of the holy name, it very quickly will take place. But the main point which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to us is this entrance into this realm of spiritual emotions, which can be achieved if we apply ourselves conscientiously to this process. And it's there in the holy name. Why do we chant the holy name? Just to get the key to all these spiritual emotions which are there in the holy name. Paraka Shakti is there together with Taraka Shakti, but somehow or other we tend to you know, we become, we really miss the goal. The real goal is to get what Lord Chaitanya brought to us, and that's the glory of the most elevated and advanced feelings which are there in Srimad Bhagavatam and which we can feel, really can feel, if we are somewhat purified and tuned in. I guess I should stop. So that's how I don't know if I explained anything or bevildered you completely, but I found it very interesting, this whole story, why two meanings are there. It's obviously the two meanings are very obvious in this verse, but it's again this reciprocation of love. Anyway, you wanted to ask something?
Thank you, Maharaj, for a wonderful class. I apologize, I was a little late, so I don't know if you explained in the beginning, but you know when you're explaining Madhvacharya's commentary on the understanding of God and Mahaprabhu's?
Yeah.
I've heard often that Madhvacharya's philosophy is actually a lot different from ours in various respects.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, even compared to other sampradayas, in some ways, actually, our Gaudiya Vaishnavism is more different to Madhvacharya than it is to some of the other sampradayas. And yet, we are connected in Madhvacharya's line. And let's say they probably don't even, maybe some of them might not even accept us as being part of theirs. So what is our validity for claiming that we are part of Madhvacharya's line?
That's a difficult question, quite controversial question. And there is a lot of Madhvas which don't accept Gaudiya Sampradaya as bona fide. Madhvas tend to be quite sectarian. And it's interesting, you know, that there is a lot of strange things, at least in the current practices of Madhava followers. And many of them, they definitely don't accept Gaudiyas. But there are some very prominent representatives of Madhava Sampradaya who do accept us. For example, Pejavarswami. He's a good friend of Srila Radhanath Maharaj, and he always speaks very highly about Prabhupada. And of course, it's not a universal point of view, not universally accepted, but of course, Pejavarswami is the most respectable sannyasi which is there presently existing in Madhva Sampradaya. So one validity is that some of their swamis, they really respect and accept us as such. For us, in one sense, it's not that important to be recognized, whether they recognize us or not. Because there is another validity of any sampradaya, that's the ability of sampradaya to convert other people into the folds of sampradaya. And Madhava Sampradaya, honestly speaking, historically was not very successful in this regard. They are contained in Tulunad, in Karnataka, and not even the whole Karnataka, you know. And hardly anyone beyond the borders of Karnataka knows about Madhavas. It's not, we should not really underestimate this point, because this point is important. Like we know some other groups here, I don't want to mention the name. I don't want actually to say anything bad about anyone, but the validity of any sampradaya is also judged by the extent the sampradaya can present its teaching in a universal way, so that everyone will, so that normal people will understand the relevance of these teachings. And you know, unfortunately, quite a few schools of philosophy, they failed in this, failed this test. You know, it's rare that sampradaya can give, and this is very important actually, if we consider this point. Sampradaya has two features, two aspects, two very important aspects. Sampradaya has to have universal approach, relevant to basically rank and file people. And sampradaya must convey a very high and esoteric teaching, and some people will take advantage of this. If sampradaya misses one of these points, if sampradaya misses the second point and doesn't give the esoteric sort of truths, then it becomes ultimately mundane religion, with very, you know, wide scope and very general sort of approach. But if sampradaya only gives this esoteric meaning and does not really touches the heart of the people in the street and is not capable of conveying the truth which is there contained in sampradaya in such a way that, you know, any drunkard can understand it, then there is something, again, very important is missing in this school of sampradaya. These two things should be there, and any religion is struggle how to contain these two things. The wide approach, universal approach, and very high esoteric things. And Gaudiya Sampradaya is amazing in this regard. And actually, when Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur Prabhupada came, he came and he criticized all the contemporary representatives of Gaudiya Sampradaya because they failed exactly in combining these two points. During Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur Prabhupada, there were caste Goswamis, and caste Goswamis, they were into making disciples in thousands, without really giving them the truth, really changing their hearts. Exactly what I was talking during these two parts, giving some Laukika Shraddha, some conventional Shraddha, and giving initiations in thousands and leading luxury life. And then there were some, you know, Babajis who were only talking about these esoteric secrets of Gaudiya Sampradaya. And they couldn't combine these two. And there was a gap. And actually they were wrong in both directions, but that's another thing. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, as real acharya, he came and he again said, these two things has to be there in Sampradaya. And if school, if any school of philosophy, any religious school fails in one of these areas, it's useless. It becomes ultimately useless. Bekar. It becomes useless. So so what I want to say is that it's not, we shouldn't really underestimate this point, that this ability of changing the hearts of people, or even people who don't belong traditionally to this sampradaya, is a very important point or important proof of the validity of sampradaya. It may not be important proof of our link with Madhva Sampradaya, but basically talking about the link, there are very severe differences. But there are also there is also a progression in one sense. Because when we look in sampradayas, first Shankaracharya came, And Shankaracharya said, God is impersonal. Then Ramanujacharya came, and Ramanujacharya, he said, God is Narayan. God is, and he established or gave this Aishwarya mood. Then Madhvacharya came, and the main image of God in Udupi, who? Krishna. Krishna. He, somehow or other, even though he said that you shouldn't distinguish between different forms of Krishna, but still he installed Krishna and only Krishna in Udupi. But still, it's Krishna alone. Krishna without too much relationship. But you can clearly see the progression. You know, from impersonal to personal in a complete Aishwarya mood to personal in his mood of Krishna, but still somewhat aloof. And then Lord Chaitanya came, and that's a very natural progression. And he said, yes, Krishna, but Krishna with his devotees, not Krishna alone. And the foremost of the devotees is Radha. So if we see the progression, we can also see that there is a clear link or the clear evolution, so to speak, of the teachings. That gradually you build up. But otherwise, yes, there is a lot of differences, and some of our acharyas, they don't care so much about the link with Madhava Sampradaya. Some do, starting with Baladev Vidyabhushan, and of course Kavi Karnapur, he wrote about this link. So our proof, which may not be accepted by them, is that this link is recorded by Kavi Karnapur. That's the earliest in our records mention of this whole Sampradaya and our connection or link with Madhva Sampradaya. So Kavi Karnapur is one of the greatest poets and acharyas in our line, and he says, yes, we are coming from Madhva Acharya, but there is a significant change in this progression, because starting from Madhavendra Puri, the emotional part of bhakti entered into the scene. Which is also understandable, because Madhvacharya had a special role. He was fighting with this, as we know, with Mayavad philosophy, which declared everything is unreal. So he established spiritual realism. Madhvacharya's philosophy is actually a radical realism. that everything is real, God is real. And then Lord Chaitanya came and said, yes, everything is real, but emotions are also real. There are real, eternal, spiritual emotions. That's the contribution of Lord Chaitanya. So he accepted Madhvacharya as a very significant contribution, because after Shankaracharya dismantled everything philosophically, and Ramanujacharya started reconstructing the reality, Madhvacharya established on a very firm basis that everything is real. Bhakti is real, Bhagavan is real, relationship is real. Lord Chaitanya said, and he said, one thing is missing still. You're not really into emotions, but emotions is the most valuable thing. And he came and gave this. So, again, it may not be acceptable by the people from Madhva Sampradaya, but ultimately, who cares? Let them first preach in Russia and convert thousands of people into Dvaita Vedanta. Then we can talk who is valid and who is not. And again, it's a valid point. It's a valid point. Any other questions? Yes, Prayojan Prabhu.
Dr. Pratim Mohan, when he was here in this world, he was asked a question about in the Bhakti Sandarbha. There's a verse, I think it's the second verse, the first chapter, where it talks about Paramatma actually also being in the spiritual world. in a forum, I think it was described as Anuruddha, and he was asked, well, but in the Bhagavad Gita, there seems to be a contradiction. He was manifested in this world for the existence of this universe and for the sustaining of the universe. But in that, he answered this question in such a way that he said he's looking at everybody's service. He's just there absorbing their service in the form as the super soul in the spiritual world. And I don't know if you can maybe comment, maybe.
I can't comment on this. I do know that there's, you know, super soul is not there in the spiritual world. Super soul is a special feature of the Lord, which is controlling the affairs of this world. It's a controlling feature, and I can't say. I have to hear what Fakir Mohan Prabhu said and how he said it and what he really meant by this. So I can't comment on this. Sorry for this.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, we see that our deity worship, our sadhana in this world as practicing devotees is very much in the mood of awe and reverence for purification, for uprooting the anattas in the heart. And then you also mentioned how the special gift of Mahaprabhu Rupa Goswami is to give this very nuanced development of love of Krishna. I'm just wondering if you can say a bit more about when and how our sadhana should begin to incorporate this nuanced bhakti in a way that is not sahaja or not artificial, or is it just an automatic?
Okay. No, it's not automatic. I think it's a big mistake to think that this is automatic. Actually, what happened? Srila Jiva Goswami, he from the very beginning said that there is Ajata Ruchi. When the Ruchi is not yet there, and you practice some sadhana, he specifically was meaning Raganuga sadhana, Raganuga practice. When the Ruchi is still not there, it means that the heart is full of anarthas still. And he said, yes, you may introduce little elements of this here and there. But basically my answer would be like this, that we should never forget, you know, while doing this service, external service, while doing in abundance external service, while doing a lot of external service, we should not neglect inner cultivation, but we should also be very chaste and should not show off this inner cultivation. The inner cultivation is an extremely secret thing, which is a part of my inner life, and I should show it too much. Otherwise, it will be disturbance in the society. And that's exactly what Lord Chaitanya advised to Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami while writing this enigmatic verse in reply to their request. You come and see, and we want to give up everything and come to you. And he said, no, no, no. A lady who has a paramour, she's really trying to make sure that nobody knows about this, and she externally behaves perfectly. So I think this verse is the answer to this question. We should be interested in this matter, so we should try to cultivate internally. But when prematurely it becomes an external practice, it's just, it becomes a cause for our pride. I've seen these people. They just look down at ISKCON devotees and they say, you're just nobody, and we are, you know, we are Rasika Vaishnavas. You know, Rasika Vaishnavas you can become only after Trinada Pisa Nishinadara or Pisa Ishnuna. And if you say that everyone is external and you are Rasika, you know, where is Manadena? amani namadadena, where is it? If you're just using it as an excuse or as some sort of reason to be proud, and then you are far away from this. So externally we have to train ourselves into this service, and Prabhupada gave us this amazing mission where we can really practice this service attitude and humility and tolerance. You know, ISKCON is the great place to develop tolerance. if you didn't notice yet. It's the best place. So, and it's good, it's really good. Because you have to interact with so many people and they are coming from different things. And it's good. You really develop genuine sort of humility and detachment by this. But at the same time, internally, we should not think that it will happen on its own. Like yesterday, I had there was a very sad episode. One devotee came, he's a Russian devotee living here in London, and he told me very openly, very frankly, I have been chanting more than 20 years. And I am telling you very clearly, nothing happened. And I spoke with a few senior devotees of my generation or age, and they all revealed to me that nothing happened. And moreover, I live with them in one flat, and I know we surf there, but he said, ultimately, I don't surf, I just work. And we come back, and everyone is just into his internet world, computer. And that's it, nothing else, nothing happens. And it's a very sad thing. He was very frank, and he said, what's wrong? What's going on? Why it is so? And the simple answer is that, you know, people thought that it will happen automatically. but automatically means that something is happening, but you have to respond to this and you have to increase your endeavors, you have to increase your sadhana. You have to chant more when, you know, otherwise, you know, Krishna gives you mercy, but then he sees what you're going to do with this mercy. Krishna gives mercy in increments, little by little, and then he sees what you're doing with this mercy. First, he gives you mercy in the form of shraddha, faith. That's his first installment of the mercy. And if you do it properly, if you cultivate, if you do according to this, then you go to the next stage and Krishna gives you a little more mercy, sadhu sangha. He gives you more clear understanding. There is the sadhu, you have to accept him as a teacher. And then he sees what you do on this stage. And then he gives you more mercy, bhajana kriya. And then he sees what you do with the mercy. If you give somebody something valuable, which you value very much, and then he says it, and it looks like this, and then... Will you give him something more? No. So Krishna will not give more. If we don't use it properly, don't utilize it properly to the fullest capacity. Krishna gives mercy in the form of opportunities which we have. In the form of deeper understanding which we may get. In the form of association which is available to us. He gives this on every stage. Whether we take advantage of these opportunities or his mercy or not, is up to us. And if we think, yeah, right, yeah, I'll chant 16 rounds and then I'll die. And then I become a beloved of Krishna. No. You will not. Because it's not correct. The attitude is wrong. And that's exactly, that's Lokik Shraddha approach, which I was talking about. Just really floating as a dead fish. Not even flopping, just dead, floating in the faith. So that's it. We have to be conscientious, and Srila Prabhupada gave us so much. But again, if we try to show off externally, you know, how great we are, that's sahajiya. And that's really ridiculous. That's really disgusting. You know, when people only talk about these things and at the same time don't develop the real service attitude. So it's both things should be there. And important things which is more visible to everyone and something which is invisible to anyone. Or to a few may be visible, but soon be shown. And therefore it is specifically said that Vaishnavas, they should keep three things secret. First thing, they should keep bits. They shouldn't show the bits. Therefore, it's only in a bit bag. Nobody should see actually our bits. Second of all, the name of our guru should be kept in secret. Because oftentimes people misuse the name of our guru. Oh yeah, you know, they use the guru as connection with somebody who is very great, you know, and meaning that I am great. And the third thing, your bhajan, whatever you do, your internal cultivation should be kept secret. It should not be revealed to everyone. That's a special verse which is recommending this. And some time ago I was giving a seminar and I told a bunch of Russian devotees that we should not reveal our bhajan to anyone. And at that time, in Bhaktivriksha, there was a kind of a competition who is chanting more, and they were in the groups, they were filling up the chart, who is chanting how many rounds. And then they asked me, it was a shock for them. They said, shall I not say to anyone how many rounds I chant? And I said, if you chant 16 rounds, you may say to anyone, it's no problem. You know, there is nothing to be proud of if you're chanting 16 rounds. But if you chant more, better you keep it secret. Nobody should really know it.
Can I ask a question? For one of your classes, you mentioned about certain things as we develop in the process of bhakti or as we try and get closer to Krishna. There are certain things reveal themselves that will keep us away from Krishna. And one of them, you said, this feeling of haughtiness. In other words, that we're slightly superior, more than another devotee or another, you know, follower of God in this way. This is like a subtle one, it's there, and it can be an obstacle in our practice of this bhakti yoga. Can you make it elaborate?
There's nothing more to elaborate on this. If you have this, you know, it's basically very simple, because we are trying to enjoy. Everyone is trying to get some happiness, and the easiest way to get some happiness is to feel oneself superior to others. And the easiest way to feel oneself superior to others is to drag everyone down. Or to denigrate, or to, you know, find faults. And, you know, this find-faulting mentality is nothing but our desire to enjoy. And because it's very difficult to enjoy, there is this easy way to enjoy, is to look around and say, oh, everyone is so bad, and I'm so good. There is a joke in Russian. I don't know if I will be able to convey this joke to you. It's a little gross, but still. One man comes to a director of a circus and says, my dear sir, I have a wonderful trick. A It's a wonderful thing, you know. You please include it into your program. Your circus will become world famous if you put me and include my part in the program of your circus. And the director becomes very intrigued, and he asks, what's the trick? He says, oh, it's so nice. I'll tell you now. He says, tell me, what is this? He said, you should take a big, huge bag of stool and put this bag very high up into the ceiling. And then all of a sudden, you should just smash this bag, and then this stool will be all over the place, all over the people who are sitting there. So the director of circus said, so what's the fun? No, he says, listen, that's not it. Then I enter the stage and I am in a white suit. That's the trick. Isn't it nice? Everyone is in the stool and here I am. Believe it or not, we're all doing this trick. Everyone is in the stool, and here I am. I am the only one who is completely free and pure and innocent and this and that. So, you know, remember this joke, and if you need some elaboration. Anyway. You want to talk something?
Yeah, Maharaj, in the beginning of the lecture you were saying that love is not something that can be cultivated like picking a subject or something. Then you also mentioned that it's also not something automatic. And I was just wondering, what is the process for it?
The process is... See, the process is simple. We all know this process, Shravanam and Kirtanam. first of all, the Shravanam should be proper, and it's a science. It's not such an easy thing. Prabhupada calls it the art of submissive hearing. It's a beautiful phrase which Prabhupada uses in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He says it's an art. How to hear submissively? Submissively means, doesn't mean to hear blindly. Blindly accept everything. So the mistake, when people hear this submissive, they think, oh yeah, yeah. I become a submissive hearer. You know, I just accept everything. No, submissive, otherwise it would not be art. Prabhupada specifically says there is a special art of submissive hearing. You have to be very conscious and conscientious, and you have to accept, but at the same time you have to question. You have to really, hearing should remove your doubts. And for hearing to remove your doubts, you have to question whether what you hear is really, you know, a question of some doubt or whatever. Do you agree with this or not? And at the same time, you're submissive. You're not really challenging what you hear. But to develop this attitude, you really have to make sure that the source of what you're hearing from is proper, it's bona fide. So this is the first point. And when you hear, the most important thing is that when you hear somebody speak, you hear more than you really understand rationally. Some process is taking place while you're hearing. Some subconscious process. If you hear with a proper attitude, then you're preparing your heart for a revelation. It's actually an amazing process, because we may hear some things 400 times, and then somebody says it 101st time. We hear it, and then the whole truth reveals to us. But what was happening before this the preparation for revelation was taking place. We were hearing and something was building up and, you know, some things. And then all of a sudden we said, yeah, right, now I realized it. And something which was just a theoretical truth before from the book becomes the real realization of our heart. So the hearing is the first point for realization. And the hearing again, why it is so special? Because we are, you know, the hearing is that something is coming to us from outside. In other words, we are not cooking something which is from something which is already there within the heart. It's something new, some mercy or some energy is coming to us through these vibrations which we hear if the mood is proper and correct. And then the next point is, of course, kirtanam. And kirtanam, again, is a very amazing thing. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada. He used to say that sometimes I say something which I myself don't understand. If I speak in a proper mood, I basically let Krishna to speak through me. And, you know, there was this episode when somebody was, he was giving lecture, and usually he had somebody to stenograph, how I say this? Write down, transcribe immediately what he says, everything that he says. And then, at that lecture which he was giving, nobody was transcribing. And then he said something, and then he said, yeah, this is coming from the higher plane. This is not coming from myself. I don't know it myself. It's some revelation. Basically, you know, why I said that bhakti or prema is not about cooking. Because it's a revelation. It's a descending process. But Shravanam and Kirtanam and other things is a means to facilitate revelation so that the revelation will take place. So it's basically Shravanam and Kirtanam. And at one point, after Shravanam and Kirtanam, Smaranam starts. But again, Smaranam, sometimes people totally misunderstand Smaranam. They think that I should now force myself to think of what I hear. It's a material process. Smaranam is a natural revelation process which comes after lots of Shravanam and Kirtanam. When the stream of otherworldly thoughts or images is coming to our heart. So the process is simple, Shravanam and Kirtanam and then Smaranam. But again, it should be done properly. You know. When you speak, you shouldn't have this attitude, I am speaking. I am delivering everyone. Listen to me. I will tell you the truth. No, we should be humble, you know, humble, transparent media and let Krishna speak through us. Let the truth be revealed through us. And that's what Prabhupada was teaching us, you know, how we, by the humble attitude as a speaker and a listener and thinker about Krishna, we ultimately can get this experience of love. I guess it's late. Thank you very much. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.